wars that take place on the border of Mexico, dealing with the drug wars, images of wars around the world. Every night on television or on the internet, we're exposed to seeing this type of destruction. But nothing has caused the type of destruction and devastation that, like what I want to talk about today. And I don't mean to be overly dramatic, I don't mean that. But you know, what Solomon talks to us about today in our study of Proverbs brings mass destruction. You know, a disaster like what we see on television, the tornadoes or the wars or whatever, they may never personally involve us. We may never witness them or be involved in one of those. But the type of destruction we talk about today, we will all be affected by. Today I want to talk about truth and honesty. And as we read through the Proverbs and see what it says about that, we're also going to see that God will warn us about the lying, about lying and deception and dishonesty. And before you say, well, I know lying's wrong, I mean, I don't need to hear that again, and you start to just mentally check out on me here, I ask you to give that a thought again. But to just, to stick with it, to take a look, another look at this subject, to see that there is a bigger picture involved here, that God engages more than just about not telling a lie. There's a lot to look at here. Proverbs 11, verse 3 says this, honesty guides good people. Dishonesty destroys treacherous people. Now, I want to focus on that word there, destroys. When you look that word up in the dictionary, it means a violent action against. Yeah, and really, this week, you ought to just look up the word destroys. And it gives you the idea that if God uses it here, what he had in mind, that it destroys treacherous people. When we don't talk and we don't walk in the truth, we bring destruction. Truth is a big deal because of one word, trust. Truth is a big deal because of one word, that word trust. But you see, lying and dishonesty, the absence of truth destroys trust, and no relationship, no meaningful relationship in this world can exist without trust. A marriage, a family, a church, a business situation, a partnership, friendships. Augustine said this. He said, when regard for truth has been broken down or even slightly weakened, all things will remain doubtful. Now that's a statement. That when doubt enters in, that what the person says is true, what they said is true, if you can't trust them, from then on, anything that they say or anything that they do, you doubt. You think about that for a moment. In Proverbs chapter 6, Solomon names six things that God hates. You've probably read this before. I love the way he puts it. He says, there are six things God hates. No, there's seven. And this is the way he puts it. Two of them deal with lying. Proverbs 6, 16 through 19 says, there are six things the Lord hates, seven that are detestable to him. Haughty eyes, that's arrogance. A lying tongue, there's that first one. Hands that shed innocent blood. A heart that devises wicked schemes, feet that are quick to rush into evil, a false witness who pours out lies, there's your second one, and a man who stirs up dissension among brothers. Oliver Wendell Holmes said this, sin has many tools, but a lie is the handle that fits them all. For the next few minutes, I want us to look at some of the ways that we betray the truth or violate the truth. And then how far-reaching that is in our lives. And the first one is so obvious to us that we've got to start there. And that's lying. We know that lying is wrong. Proverbs 12:22 says, the Lord detests lying lips, but he delights in men who are truthful. God hates lying. He hates it. It makes him sick. It's detestable to him. And he hates it because of the destruction that it causes. 30 times in the book of Proverbs, that short book of 31 chapters of Proverbs, 30 times God deals with dishonesty and lying. Solomon recognized that it was a terrible problem, and it still is today. A New York Times article online said 91% of people surveyed admitted to regularly lying. 36% admitted to lying on important matters. 86% lie to their parents. That's a good one, isn't it? 75% lie to their friends. It's good to have good friends, isn't it? And 69% lie to their spouses. One survey said that we are exposed to 300 lies a day. Really, it's only 200, but I just thought I'd say 300. See how easy it is? But you see, what happens there? Was it 200 or 300? Can you trust? When lying enters in, trust is destroyed. Why do we lie? Why do we lie? To get what we want or to avoid what we do not want. Selfishness is at the root of lying. Jesus said that the first commandment, most important commandment, was to love God with all that you have. He said the second is this: love others above yourself. When we are so selfish that we will lie to get what we want at the expense of other people, how can we love God first and love people second? It becomes an impossibility. But let's broaden our definition a little bit of lying. Another one that we may not think about is deception. Deception. We tend to equate facts with truth. But it's amazing what we can do with facts to change the truth. Look at this statement here. Woman without her man is a beast. Whoa, that's a strong statement you got there, Greg. But think about it this way. Let's look at it another way. Woman without her man is a beast. We didn't change any of the words, did we? But we sure changed the statement. By two punctuation marks, we changed the whole truth of the statement, what it was meant to say. We have to be careful that we do not deceive people, even though we have facts that supposedly back us up. We cannot change the truth or the facts to make it come out for us. See, this is exactly what Satan did with Eve in the garden. He took, quote, facts and just twisted them a little, presented them in such a way. Did God really say this, Eve? Did God really talk about that you couldn't, he's really not going to let you eat from this tree? And he twisted things and presented things in such a way that Eve, before it was over with, was saying, yeah, you're right. God had said, you can eat of everything. Except this one thing, and you got to stay away from that because it will lead to death. But by the time that Satan had finished, he had convinced her that God didn't want her to have something. It's the same way with you parents. You try to love and protect and guide your children. And you, when they get to those teenage years especially, and you say, honey, I'm sorry, I'm not going to let you go there. I'm not going to let you stay out that late. I can't let you do that. Because I care too much about you. And by the time your son or daughter has been with their friends and some friend has planted the idea, your parents are just trying to control your life. They don't want you to have any fun. Your children come back. You're just trying to run my life. You see what happened? The facts didn't change. The truth didn't change. But the way it is twisted or presented, the way we're deceived on these things, it changes the whole outset. We must be careful that we do not change the truth or alter the way we present it to get what we want or to manipulate someone into our advantage. For instance, there's ways we can do that. Exaggeration. You know, we don't ever think about that could be a bad thing, but exaggeration. Now, all of us have said things like, oh, I'm burning up. Some of you said in here today, either I'm burning up, somebody right beside you says, I'm freezing in here. And neither one of them are true. They're exaggerations. And I don't guess there's a tremendous amount of harm in that unless we use exaggeration to manipulate the situation. I really, really need this. and we manipulate people to do something for us, to change the outcome. When the pure truth, as it really is, isn't strong enough to get what you want, we can exaggerate it to manipulate people to give us what we want. That's wrong. That's deception. Another is flattery. You know, we never think about that. Flattery is basically telling someone what they want to hear, even if it isn't true. Why do we flatter? I ask, why do we lie? Why do we flatter? To get what we want or to avoid something we do not want. And we usually don't think about it as being harmful. At the root of it is the same reason that we lie, is to get what we want. Proverbs 26:28 says this: a lying tongue hates those it hurts, and a flattering mouth works ruin. Solomon equated lies with flattery. Lies with flattery. Well, let me give you some ideas here. You know, you may not think flattery is very bad. How many of you ever watched the early episodes of the new season of American Idol? When it's the people that are just trying to get on there, and you hear them sing, and you go, don't they know? You know, it's painful. Why? They don't know. You know why they don't know? It's all their lives have been told how good they were, and nobody was honest enough saying, this isn't your gift. And so, why did they flatter? They didn't want to have to face the truth. They didn't want to have to give criticism. Or maybe they just wanted the person to like them, so they never told them the truth. Seriously, though, here's a good example of difference between a compliment and flattery. This week, it was Friday, as a matter of fact, I was uptown. I saw one of our members here from the church, a lady here at the church. We were standing there in the parking lot talking. And I said, you look wonderful. And she said, well, thank you. And she said, I like your purple shirt. I was wearing a purple shirt. I said, well, thank you. We talked a few more minutes and left and went on our way. Was anything wrong with that? I'll tell you why it wasn't anything wrong with it, and what would have made it wrong is if I would have told her, you look wonderful today, and in order to butter her up, to soften her up, that I could ask a big favor, to get her on my side in something. That's flattery. I'm manipulating the truth in order to get somebody on my side. Or she could have said, I like purple, and then her mind is saying, because I hate Carolina blue so bad. But none of that was true. We complimented. It wasn't flattery to get something out of the other person. Another one is this: cheating. Cheating. You know, school, business, anywhere we go, we've come to actually expect people to cheat us. One university survey revealed that 70% of students admitted to cheating. Admitted it. Another survey revealed that 49% of married couples, that in that marriage, one of the members had been unfaithful. That's cheating. In business, we're constantly reminded that people are cheating us out of our money. We watch 2020, we watch Dateline, all of the shows. They're constantly revealing some business that's stealing our money. They're cheating us out of our money. Even our local television stations are always exposing a business for doing that. And we've just come to say, well, yeah, that's the way they do business. And we almost expect it and accept that it's happening. And but we know that not everything that we hear on television is true. If it was, none of us would be bald. We would have no wrinkles. None of us would be overweight. We would all be in shape. And you could lose 150 pounds simply by eating at Subway 3 times a day. But we know that doesn't happen. Proverbs 11:1 says, the Lord abhors dishonest scales, but accurate weights are his delight. I love that. He says the Lord hates cheating. He hates people cheating others. No matter how you slice it, cheating is wrong. Why is it wrong? Why do we cheat? To get something we want or to avoid something we do not want. Sound familiar? Same reason we lie, same reason we flatter, same reason we deceive. And it doesn't matter that everyone else is doing it, or the boss expects it, or everybody knows it, and it ain't cheating if you don't get caught. God knows it. God sees it. God calls it cheating. God calls it a lie. It is harmful. It is destructive. Remember Acts chapter 5, Ananias and Sapphira? You know, Ananias and Sapphira, the married couple, they say, we're going to sell a piece of land, give the money to the church. And then they make up the deal themselves, say, well, we're going to let them think it's we're giving it all, but we're going to keep part of it for ourselves. And Ananias comes in, and before Peter and the church there, and Peter says, what made you think of doing something like this? Where would you get such an idea? Wasn't the land yours to start with, and once you sold it, wasn't your money yours to do with as you pleased? And I know you can complete the sentence for me when he said, you have not lied to men, you have lied to, say it for me, God. Cheating is against God. So when you made your financial pledges, when I think about this over the course of even the last 10 years, several occasions where we've made financial pledges that you wrote down what you would give above and beyond for special projects, like building a new building back here. And you turned those in. Never once did your elders, deacons, or staff look at your pledges and say, well, you know, this family hadn't done what they said they were going to do. Because that pledge was between you and God. And if you don't fulfill that pledge, that's between you and God. And when we make a pledge to God that we will be faithful, that we'll honor Him, that we'll be committed to our husbands, our wives, and our families, and we will do the things that we say we'll do, that's between us and God. When you sit in a classroom and get a grade that is not really yours because you took answers from somebody else or got it off the internet from somewhere else, that's cheating. That's wrong. You have cheated God, not just yourself or the teacher or anyone else. When you go look outside of your marriage for intimacy somewhere other than with your husband or wife, that's cheating. That's between you and God. You've cheated on God, not just your spouse. God knows cheating is wrong, and He knows what we do, and He calls it wrong. And it is wrong even if no one else thinks it is. Well, is there an app for this? You know, we're talking about, that's our series. Is there an app for this? Is there anything that we can do? What does God say to do? Well, I think there's a couple of things we can commit to here today. One is commit to tell the truth in the small things. There is a connection between the seemingly small things and the significant things when it comes to telling the truth. Jesus said this in Luke 16:10. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much. It all begins with the little things. Don't order water at the restaurant and then fill your cup with Sprite. Don't save a few dollars by lying about your children's age at the movie theater. Don't sell your integrity by getting your child when that telemarketer calls, tell him I'm not here. And by all means, don't sell your integrity away by asking your wife or your son or daughter to do it for you. Every time that we do something like that, our integrity is damaged. It's like a strong piece of tape, and the first time you tear it off and you stick it to something, it holds strong. You pull it off, you put it back, it still sticks. But you pull it off, it sticks a little less. You pull it off, put it back, and you know what happens. Before too long, it loses its stickiness. It loses its reason. And my friends, every time we lie, every time we cheat, and every time we deceive, we lose a little bit of our will to be people of integrity, the people of the truth. So be careful of that. Be honest with the little things. Tell the truth in the small things. Second thing that we can do is tell the truth even when it costs you something. Let me say it one more time. You're probably tired of it. Why do we lie? Why do we cheat? Why do we deceive? Because we want something or we don't want the results of something. Truth is going to cost you something. Truth will always cost us something, because we're either going to have to face the music and take what we don't want to take or whatever. I remember growing up, and we'd get the daily paper, and I don't read the paper anymore, but back I remember as a young teenager, the paper would come and I'd read, and one of the things I would read was Ann Landers, you know, Dear Abby. Those things. I don't even know if they still do that, but I was listening to a sermon online this week, and a guy mentioned this, and he was saying in his area it was Dear Annie. And he recounted one story where a man had written in, and his wife was in the nursing home, had been in for years. She had Alzheimer's, and she couldn't, she didn't know him, and she really couldn't respond to anything. And he wrote to her and explained that, and then he said, but I've met another woman, and I just want to know, do I have the right to love again, to divorce my wife, and to marry again? And Annie wrote back and said, as long as you take care of the medical needs of your wife for the remainder of her life, you are free to find love again. You deserve that. See, the world says keep your commitments as long as it doesn't cost too much. As long as it doesn't hurt us too much. It doesn't cost too much. And what's just the opposite of the story that I read? Also, maybe you've heard it too. Of the waitress who told the story that every day a little gentleman, elderly gentleman, would come in, eat some breakfast, drink his coffee, and then he would leave. And she began to befriend this old gentleman and talk to him. And one day she'd say, why do you always, he had said, well, honey, I got to go. And she said, where do you always have to run off to every morning? And he said, see, my wife is in the nursing facility, and I catch the bus over every day, and I spend the day with her. She hasn't known me for years. She doesn't know anybody. She has Alzheimer's. And that sweet, innocent waitress said, if she doesn't even know that you're there, she doesn't know you, why do you go? And he just patted that waitress' hand and says, honey, she may not know who I am, but I know who she is. We should look so different to the world. We should stand out to the world because we're people of the truth. We're people of truth. When it comes to this, they should know that we are different. And they should see something that they don't see in anyone else. Because we're children of God, not children of the devil. John 8:44, when Jesus was describing the devil, he said this, when he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies. It comes natural to Satan. That's his language. It's second nature to him. Is it second nature to us? But are we more like God when he's described in these scriptures, first in 1 John 1:5, when it talks about God, it says, in him there is no darkness at all. He's transparent. He is who he says he is. He is who he appears to be. In John 4:24, he talks about that he is spirit and truth, and says, and we must worship in spirit and truth because of who he is. In John 1:14, describing Jesus, says he is full of grace and truth. And Psalm 31:5 says he is the God of truth. Now, who do we resemble? The father of lies, or we the God of truth? And then finally for us, Titus 1:2 puts it together where he's describing, talking about our faith. He says, we have a faith and knowledge resting on the hope of eternal life, which God, who does not lie, promised before the beginning of time. You see, truth is at the core of everything. Our trust in God is because we can trust in him, because he always tells the truth. He promised these things, and he does not lie, so therefore we can trust him. So here we are, right back at trust again, aren't we? That's what we began with, trust. You see, you can't separate the two. Truth and trust go hand in hand. And so today, of course, we've got to ask the question, do you trust in the truth of God Himself? Have you trusted your life into His hands, your salvation, your eternity in His hands because of the truth He tells? That's where it's got to begin. And then, are we trusting enough as those who are already Christians, are we trusting enough in Him that we tell the truth no matter what? No matter what we may not get or what consequences we may get. So that's a great question for us here today. Do we trust in God and in His truth? And do we trust enough to tell the truth, to walk in the truth? Eric's going to come. We're going to sing our hymn of invitation. And it's I Surrender All. You know, maybe that's where some of us need to start today, saying I'm surrendering all of this today. I'll become a person of the truth. And you begin with giving your life to Christ. Will you do that today as we sing? Let's stand together.